good morning here in Center Court East. Good morning over in Center Court West. Good morning in the chapel. So glad that you all are here. Before anything, I want to say thank you because so many of you have sent in warm-hearted emails to me and cards. If you're brand new, I should explain. I've been in the hospital a couple of times the last 2 weeks. I feel a little bit like a laboratory rat, but they're getting things figured out and I'm on the mend. And so I'm just going to leave it at that. If you don't get if you're not on our distribution list for emails, just ask somebody who looks like they've been here a while and they can tell you a little bit more about it. Now, here's what I want to say after thank you. I want to say, now let's talk about the weather, because we are going to make some modifications in the schedule for this Tuesday. Probably you have heard, it sounds like it's going to be cold and a little bit messy with the snow and ice mix. If you're new to these parts from colder climates, you're going to giggle, but down in these parts, you don't want to drive when that happens. You're like, I know how to do it. Yeah, but none of us do. And so you want to stay off the roads, and so we're going to do our part to help that to happen Tuesday night. We're going to postpone the shop talk. That's the whole men's thing. You were seeing it on the video. So gentlemen, if you were coming, just bounce 1 week forward. We'll do it next Tuesday, not this Tuesday. If you invited some guys and they're not on any distribution list, be sure you call them. Let them know. Don't drive there on Tuesday. We're waiting 1 week. Also gives us another week to invite some people. So because my energy's been a little bit weird as they're kind of working to get all my everything adjusted, Clay Scroggins, beloved around here, agreed to jump in and keep us going on the Exodus series, and I'm grateful for that. Let's give him a big hand as he comes right now. Thanks, man.
Thanks, Ken. I'm so grateful that Ken is getting better, but I've been learning from Ken just about how to handle, you know, some of the more mysterious health stuff that sometimes happens. He does it with such great humility, but also openness and also great self-deprecation, which I feel like is helpful in all aspects of life. Speaking of that, I don't know if you realize this, but right now, as we speak, probably at a church somewhere in Kansas City, someone just opened a door for Patrick Mahomes and a referee threw a flag for unnecessary roughness. They're like, that was too much. That was too much. Let the man open his own door. Wow. I don't know about you, but I was so frustrated watching that last night. That was really hard to watch. But I will tell you this, great year for the Texans, and it could be worse, right? I mean, you could be a Dallas Cowboy, and that would just really have been rough, right? I've got a friend who is he lives in Texas, and he's a big Chiefs fan. And I texted him. I was like, hey, I know a lot of Sundays you're quick to, you know, throw a jab or two about your beloved Chiefs, but I don't think this is the week. I don't think any of us are going to feel sorry for you. So I hope that he's laying off of it. Happy New Year, everyone. Are we still in the window where you can say Happy New Year? I think so. Why not, right? I know, you know, some of you are probably rolling into this year with great excitement and hope. You've got your resolutions, you've got your slogan, new year, new me, right? And then others of you, you've given up on that. You're like, you know what, I don't really do that. I'm not really a resolutions kind of person. Here's what I've learned about life too, is that those two different people end up marrying each other. That's the way life works. At least that's the way my marriage works. My wife is so great at things like resolutions and goals and discipline. And we've got charts on our refrigerator. We've got calendars. She's got little 90-day, 50-day goals for people. I love how she gives them to me as well, whether I wanted them or not. In fact, for Christmas, she gave me a weighted vest. I don't know if you have used one of those. I didn't know how to accept that present. I just thought, I don't know what you're trying to say by this. I like the amount of weight that I carry just here. I don't need more. I'm not looking to carry more, add more. So she's doing this challenge, and some of our kids have adopted into it, and some others haven't. But 50 squats a day with the weighted vest. And so for my, I mean, the way I would describe 2025 so far, it's just with the word pain, just everything. I mean, even to sit down like that, I'm just like, oh my goodness, that hurts. But today we're going to be talking not just about the new year, not just about the way we're rolling into the year, because I know, honestly, some of you, life's going great. You're excited about this year. You've still got plans and hopes and dreams, but we're going to talk to a different crowd. There are others of us, and honestly, this is probably true of all of us at different stages in life, but maybe for some of us, you might find yourself in this stage where you're in a season of waiting. You're coming into the year just going, you know what? Yeah, the calendar's flipped, but nothing's really changed because I'm still waiting on God. Waiting on Him to fix this situation, to change this situation, to remove this person from the situation, whatever it may be. And as we jump into the story of Exodus, the story of God's people through the book of Exodus, Pastor Dan launched it last week. Exodus 1 talked about Moses coming onto the scene, being put into that basket, sailing down the river, and then being adopted into Pharaoh's family. But today we pick the story up in Exodus 2, which, by the way, if you have your Bible, you're welcome to turn there. And if you don't have a Bible, in all of our venues, if you'll just raise your hand real quickly, and we've got volunteers that would love to just come and hand you one. You can use it for today and leave it in your seat if you would like, or if you want to just take it home with you, you can take it home with you, and it is our gift to you. How about that? But today we're going to look at the story of Moses found in Exodus 2. Exodus chapter 2, verse 11 is where we're going to pick up, where we're going to look at a season of life for Moses where he is waiting. Here's what I've learned about waiting. I've had plenty of seasons in my life where I've been waiting, and in some areas of life right now, still in a season of waiting. But this is some of the honest reality of waiting. You can throw that first slide up. The wilderness, which is often where we find ourselves waiting, is where you realize what you don't know and how little control you actually have, right? And if you're in a season where you feel like I'm in the wilderness, I'm waiting on God to move something, I'm waiting on God to fix something, you've probably gotten to that point where you've realized, oh, I am well aware of what I don't know, and I'm well aware of how little control I actually have. It's what's most difficult to me about waiting is you think, if I knew there was something to do, I would do it, but I don't even know what to do to fix this. Whether it's parents who are aging, whether it's a situation with a child that just feels like you don't know what you're supposed to do about it, whether it's a job situation where you're either out of work or in between jobs, or you've got a situation at work that just feels, it's amazing how much when work is not in a great place, it can just create discomfort for all of our lives. And maybe you're in a season like that. Maybe in a relationship, maybe in your marriage, maybe in your family somehow, maybe there's just a situation where you go, I don't know if there's anything else I can do, and I just feel so out of control, and I'm waiting on God. It's not a fun season. In fact, I don't even really enjoy talking about this topic, but this is such a relevant topic for so many of us, and it's where we find Exodus 2. It's where we find Moses. So this is how we're going to pick up the story in Exodus chapter 2, verse 11. One day after Moses had grows up as the prince of Egypt, right? Some of you, it's just dawning on you that you're like, oh, well, I've never read the book, but I've seen the movie. That's what we're talking about. Yeah, this is the prince of Egypt. He went out to where his own people were, and this is a little tricky. Who are they referring to? His own people. Because he is seen as an Egyptian. He's part of the family of Pharaoh, but his own people are the Hebrew people, the Hebrew men and women who are enslaved, they themselves are in a season of waiting. They're in a season of oppression. And Moses goes out, sees his own people. He watched all of their hard labor. I'm sure they all watched him going, wouldn't be the worst thing in the world if you picked up a shovel and helped us out. I mean, instead of just watching us, right? But he's going to intervene because he sees an Egyptian beating a Hebrew, one of his own people, and he's furious. He doesn't know what to do. He doesn't know how to handle the situation. He looks this way. He looks that way, the author tells us. He sees no one. And so he commits murder. And he kills the Egyptian and then hides the Egyptian in the sand. This is a moment for Moses where he's not waiting on God. He's going, God, I don't know what you're doing in all this. But in the absence of you doing something, I'm going to do something. And I'm going to take matters into my own hands. I'm going to have to handle this situation because clearly you're absent. You ever been there where you go, I've been waiting long enough, God. I've prayed about this, God. I've prayed about it all week. And here we are on Sunday and you haven't done anything about it. So I guess I'm going to have to take matters into my own hands. And so he thinks he got away with it. He thinks that maybe he did it in a way that no one was aware of what happened. But the next day he goes out and he sees two of his own people, two Hebrew people fighting with each other. And he asks the one in the wrong, he says, why are you hitting your fellow Hebrew like this? Come on, stop, knock it off, quit. And the Hebrew gets a little frustrated that Moses is being bossy. So the man says, who made you the ruler? Who made you the judge over us? Oh, are you thinking of killing me like you killed that Egyptian? And then Moses immediately felt afraid and immediately thought, oh, what I have done must have become known. The word's out. I thought what I had done in secret, no one knew about, but now the word is out. And now, because of this, Moses has got a decision to make. How am I going to handle this? And this is what prompts his season of waiting, his season in the wilderness. When Pharaoh heard this, Pharaoh tried to kill Moses, but Moses fled from Pharaoh and went to live in Midian, where he sat down by a well. Now, the author who's writing this is leaving out a lot of detail, right? I mean, you talk about hitting the highlights. This is pretty remarkable how much he's glossing over here, because he fast forwards to Moses takes matters into his own hand and kills someone too. Pharaoh's trying to kill him and he flees to Midian, and then he's like, oh, and then he just sat down next to a well, right? You're like, there's a lot in between there that you've left out that we are to read between the lines. How do you think Moses felt? What was his experience like? How much fear was he feeling? Was he thinking his life was over? Was he frustrated at God? Going, God, you got me into this. Are you going to get me out of this? Did he flee to Midian thinking, I'll let the dust settle. I'll go into witness protection for, 6 months or so. Do any of you know, any of you Bible scholars who love a good, Friday night Trivial Pursuit Bible edition game? Any of you know how long Moses was in Midian? 40 years. This wasn't a long weekend. This wasn't we might get 2 inches and we'll let it pass and see what happens the next day. 40 years he was in the wilderness. And what we're going to see, what we're going to learn, I'm going to finish this story in Exodus 2, and then I want to just pull some principles out of it. But one of the things we've got to be aware of is look at how God provides for Moses in the middle of his waiting. Verse 16 says, now a priest of Midian had 7 daughters. Wow, that's a handful, right? We have 5 children. We go to the grocery store and people immediately tell me, oh my goodness, that's a lot. I love to tell them, it's also a blessing. It is a blessing from God. It quickly quiets them, right? The old Jesus juke. This man had 7 daughters, and they came to draw water. So remember, he's sitting on this brick wall next to this well. And these 7 daughters come to do their daily chores. They come to draw water and fill the troughs to water their father's flock. When some people came to stir up some trouble, some shepherds came along and drove them away. Who do you think you are? What are you here for? Maybe one of them was hitting on one of them. Who knows? But Moses says, hey, knock it off. I got a reputation. I don't know if you've heard about me, but I'm not afraid to handle myself, right? This is that moment in that movie, Taken. You remember that? Where he says, I don't know who you are and I don't know what you're up to, but I have a particular set of skills. A set of skills that make me a nightmare for someone like you. This is essentially what Moses tells these shepherds. And these seven girls are over there going like, oh my goodness, who is this guy? Right? So they go home early that day. They return to their father and he asks them, he says, why have you returned so early? Usually it takes you longer to handle your chores. And they go, well, because we had some help today. Let us tell you the story, Dad, right? And they answer and they say, well, an Egyptian rescued us from the shepherds and he even drew water for us and he watered the flock for us. And so here we see in the midst of Moses' waiting that God goes, Moses, I am watching after you. You are not on your own. You are not alone. I haven't just left you out in the middle of nowhere. I'm sure he had plenty of moments going, I had it so good in Egypt. Things were going so well. And now I'm in a season of waiting. When, God, are you going to provide? And God's going, hello, I am providing. I am giving you your provision for the day. The father of the seven daughters, he asks, he says, well, where is this guy? He said, why didn't you invite him over? Did you just leave him? So Moses agrees to stay with the man who ended up giving one of his daughter Zipporah, to Moses in marriage. And Zipporah gave birth to a son, and Moses named him Gershom. Look at this line, saying, I have become a foreigner in a foreign land. In a sense, we see Moses accepting the lot that he was now given in life. It's as if he's going, God, I've been waiting. God, I've been wanting you to move. God, I've been hoping that you'll do something to restore my situation in Egypt, to show me where you're taking me, to give me a vision or a plan for my life. But clearly, you're not doing any of that. So I guess I'm just going to be here. I guess I'm just going to set up my tent. I guess I'm just going to make a home here in the waiting room. And maybe some of you feel that way, where it's been so long, you've almost given up, going, well, I guess God's not going to come through. The last couple of verses of this chapter set up for us this beautiful picture of how God is not leaving us alone in the middle of our pain. That he's up to something. And it sets up where we're going to head next, which is this beautiful moment where Moses has this conversation with God through this burning bush. That's Exodus 3. But before we get there, we've got to learn what we're supposed to learn. We've got to understand what we can understand from the season of waiting. But here's what the author says in verse 23, verse 24, verse 25, which ends the chapter. He says, during that long period of time, the king of Egypt eventually dies. The Israelites, they groan in their slavery and they cry out, and their cry for help because of their slavery goes up to God. Again, Moses is not the only one waiting. Though he does have what the teenagers call main character energy, right? He thinks, oh, this whole thing's about me, but everybody in slavery's going, you're not the only one, Moses. In fact, it worked out quite well for you. Things still haven't worked out for us, and we're still stuck in slavery. But God, verse 24, God heard their groaning. Look at this. This is so beautiful. We have to tie ourselves onto this. We have to allow this to anchor itself in our heart. That God heard their groaning and he, what's the word? He remembered. How beautiful is this? God heard their groaning and he remembered his covenant with Abraham. He remembered his covenant with Isaac and he remembered his covenant with Jacob. And he goes, oh yeah. And see, I think you got to remember, yes, this is inspired by the Holy Spirit, but this is a human trying to make sense of this who's writing this. And it's not as if God forgot. It's not as if God had amnesia. That God was reminded of, that he reminded himself, in a sense, of this covenant, not a contract, but a covenant that he had. And so God looked on the Israelites and was concerned about them. And God is going to move, and he's going to move through Moses. But before we get there, I want to talk about how do we understand our waiting? How do we understand what God is doing? How do we understand who God is? I want to try to draw some principles out of this, draw some insight. The first thing I want to do is I want to try to develop this three-legged stool, a framework in a sense for what I think we have to understand about the wilderness. If you're a note taker, maybe you'll write these down. Maybe you'll text them to yourself. Maybe, you know, if you got somebody down the road that you don't feel like is paying enough attention, text them. Be like, hey, you seem like you missed this, but this was for you. People love when you send them notes from a sermon saying, hey, this wasn't for me. This was actually for you. Real good look. It's a good look to try that. So I would encourage you. But here's the framework that I want us to try to build our understanding of the wilderness upon. First is this, that God leads us into the wilderness. And it's not out of cruelty. He does it out of love. But it's important for us to understand that this is who God is. This is the essence of his character. That yes, we long for the moment of resurrection. We long for the moment of hope. We long for the moment where we can see what he's doing. But before we get there, he always leads us into some kind of season of wilderness. How does the author in Psalms say, how does he put it? Psalm 23, you remember? He said, I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, and I will fear no evil because I know God is with me. He says, I'm trying to get somewhere, and God somehow is walking with me through this valley that I don't want to be in. I don't want to be here. But this is what Jesus had to walk through. This is the gospel, that Jesus had to go through the death to get to the resurrection. And it is not lost on me that that is a cycle, that is a symbolic of what God does in all areas of our life, that he allows us to go through the death so that we can get to the life. He allows us to go into the wilderness so we can get to the other side. He allows us to go through the desert so we can get to the promised land. This is what he does. This is who he is. And we've got to remind ourselves at times that it is God who is leading us. That God has not left us, that he has not forgotten about us, but he leads us into the wilderness. That's hard to hold on to, especially when you're in the season, a season that's just hard or desolate, or you feel broken, or you feel the brokenness of life. But we have to hold on to the truth that the Almighty God loves us enough to allow us to experience the wilderness. Jesus said it. He said, in this life, you will have trouble. But he doesn't stop there. He said, but you can have peace because I have overcome even the trouble. That's the second leg of the stool. Yeah, he leads us into it, but this is more hopeful in a sense. He reveals himself in the wilderness. Right? I see some of you nodding because this is your story. This is your experience, right? You never would know God the way you know God now if you had not gone through the wilderness. You would not trust God the way you trust God now if you hadn't experienced that hard season. You wouldn't know how to depend on him. You wouldn't know how rich he is. You wouldn't know how loving he is. You wouldn't know how caring he is if you only knew the good times. Yes, all of us long for the seasons of bounty, the seasons of promotion, the seasons of glory, the season where everything is up and to the right. We love those seasons, but we all are prone to forget God in those seasons, right? I mean, when things are great, when everything's just, the boss is texting you and you're like, is it another promotion? Are you trying to give me another raise? Is that what this is about, right? We love it when that's what life is all about. The school calls, you're like, another award for one of my children? Is that what this is about, right? You're just like, man, this is just, I mean, when it rains, it pours. This is awesome. Yeah, that's wonderful. But we're all tempted to forget God in those seasons. Who do we depend on in those seasons? Ourselves, right? We depend on our health. We depend on our bank account. We depend on our wealth advisor. Some of you are like, I hope one day I have to get a wealth advisor, right? We depend on anyone but God. But it's in the wilderness that God shows us who he is. It's in the wilderness that we learn to cling to him. It's in the wilderness that we learn to hold on to him. Yeah, God leads us into the wilderness. God reveals himself to us in the wilderness. And then the third leg of this stool is that God prepares us in the wilderness. We have to remind ourselves that God is building something in us when we're in the middle of the waiting. You think Moses knew this? I don't know that he did. I mean, the author doesn't really tell us. I just know human nature is to think, no, God's turned his back. God's forgotten. God's brought me out to the middle of this desolation, Midian, and he's just left me. He's forgotten about me. But what if, I mean, just imagine if God would have showed Moses what he was really up to. Moses, let me show you what I'm about to do. I'm about to, yes, it's going to be 40 years, a season of waiting, but then I'm going to call you out of Midian. He's like, how are you going to do it, God? No, it's going to be interesting. Just hang on. You'll get the whole seat, but you only need the front of it. I'm the edge of it. It's going to be a really exhilarating story, but I'm going to speak to you through this burning bush, and I'm going to tell you to go to Pharaoh, and I'm going to tell you, I'm going to give you the message. You're going to go tell Pharaoh with boldness. You're going to say, let my people go. That's right. And Moses would be like, I'm going to what? Yeah, you're going to. And he's not going to listen to you, but you're going to have these 10 plagues that I'm going to arm you with. It's going to be some of the best artillery that anyone has ever experienced. And you're going to unleash it onto Pharaoh and his whole household. And eventually it's going to get so bad that Pharaoh's going to relent and he's going to do just what you said. Moses is going, he's going to let my people go? Yes, he's going to let your people go. Are we going to be able to get far? Well, you're going to get far enough to the Red Sea. And he's like, oh, and that's where we're going to get stuck? Yeah, but it doesn't end there. No, I'm going to do something else pretty miraculous. You're going to tell the sea to part. Moses is like, well, it's one thing to tell it to part, but it's like, no, it's going to do it. It's going to part? Yeah, it's going to part. And I'm going to be able to just walk right through. Yeah, the land is going to be dry. Where the water was, the land will be dry. The water will be held up like a wall, and all of you and all of your people will be able to get across. And Pharaoh's going to be hot on your tail at that point. He's going to be chasing you. Guess what's going to happen to him? Moses is like, I can't even guess. This story's wild already. He's like, he's going to be in the middle of the Red Sea, and the water's going to unpart, and it's going to kill him and all of his men. Moses is like, they should make a movie about this. He's like, well, I don't know how to tell you, but they're going to do that as well. He's like, that's remarkable, God. He's like, I know. I'm getting you ready to lead all of that. I'm sure if God would have told Moses all that, number one, of course, he wouldn't even have believed him. But he would have gone, well, let's go. I mean, ring the bell. Let's start school. Like, I'm ready to learn. I'm taking notes. What do I need to understand? He's like, I'm going to do it. In those 40 years, I'm going to prepare you. I'm going to get you ready for this. I want to start now. You're not ready now. I want to get you ready for this. I'm preparing you. See, what if that was the case for you? I mean, what if God said, what if he showed you a vision and said, here's where I'm leading you. Here's what I'm getting you ready for. Here's what I'm preparing you for. You would probably go, all right, well, that at least makes this season a little more worth it, right? I can understand that you're doing something in it. But it's why we have to understand that God leads us into it. Yes, God shows us himself in it. But God also prepares us for something. He is preparing you for something. It might not be as remarkable as what he was preparing Moses for. I'll give you that. But he is preparing you for something, something specific to you, something that if not for this season, that you wouldn't be ready for it. He could even try to tell you about it. And you would go, well, let's start now. And when you go, I can't, you're not ready. I need to get you ready. And the waiting is where we learn. I know it's not fun. It's not exciting. It's not a season any of us want to be in, but we got to remind ourselves, but he's doing something in it. He's preparing me for something in it. He's teaching me something that I would only learn in this season. This is God. This is how he works. I want to give you three big, for me, this is what I feel like God is teaching me through this story. First one is this: look out for God's provision in the middle of the waiting. Fix your eyes on God's provision in the waiting. Was God providing for Moses in the middle of the waiting? Zipporah is on the sideline being like, you better believe he was. Hello, right? Yeah, he was. He brought him his wife in the middle of it. He's taking care of him. And it's real easy in the waiting to focus on what God is not doing. But what if we say, I'm going to be different. I'm going to find God's activity in the middle of the waiting. It's not going to be lost on me that God is providing for me in the middle of it. No, I'm going to be looking for it. I'm going to train my eyes to see it. Maybe you create a gratitude journal. You know what happens when you start looking for it? It starts showing up more. And it's not that it wasn't there. It's been there the whole time, but your eyes are now trained to see it. So would you look out for God's provision? Number two, would you focus on faithfulness and not on outcomes? This is what I feel like God is challenging me with. We've got a child right now. I won't tell you his name. You don't know him anyway, but he's our youngest child. He's 7, and he's been lying a lot lately. Which when you lie in general, like as a child lying, it's one thing. But when you grow up as a pastor's child and you're lying, it just feels heavier. I don't know what about, but it just feels like it shouldn't be. And we've had seasons like this with other children, and I hope in generally God's worked it out. But with this one, it feels more pronounced and it feels like it's lasting longer to the point where I succumb to the lie of the immediate, right? Which is, this is gonna be the way it is forever. And so I've already fast forward to the moment where I get the call from him, Dad, I only have one phone call and I called you, right? I'm like, this is what it's gonna do to you. This is where it's taking you. My wife is so much better at this than me because even yesterday she was like, why are you fixating on this one little thing? Like, let's take a bigger view of this. Like, God's going to work this out. We can't focus on the outcome. We've got to stay faithful to do what we know we need to do. I'm like, oh, you're so right, you know? But this is what happens in the waiting. Is that we go, God, when are you going to fix this? God, when are you going to change this? When are you going to do something about it? And God's going, I want you to put one foot in front of the other. I want you to do today the thing that you know I'm asking you to do. Focus on being faithful. Don't focus on the outcome. Focus on the process. Don't focus on the destination. And then number three, would you be willing to trust God's timing? It's not easy to do. I have learned if I were to ever write a book on preaching, this is one of the things I would teach. It is way easier to preach on trust than it is to trust. It's easier to preach on forgiveness than it is to actually forgive. Talking about trusting God's timing, easy. Actually trusting God's timing, not easy. But would you be willing to say, God, I'm going to trust your timing? You remember the story from, I think Brennan Manning told it in Ragamuffin Gospel. The story about the American businessman who got the opportunity to go to serve with Mother Teresa. And he got the opportunity not only toward the end of his trip there, he got the opportunity to actually pray with her. Tells her, this is one of the greatest honors of my life. I can't believe I'm getting to do this. And supposedly the way Brennan Manning tells the story, he says this man, as they're about to start praying together, she asks him, she says, hey, may I ask you before I pray for you, how can I pray for you? And he says, Well, thank you for asking. This is so, again, so humbling. But I've got a lot of situations back home. I need to know what God is up to. I need to see a map. I'm praying for clarity. The way the story is told, she kind of starts chuckling, and she said, well, I'm not going to pray for that. Can you only imagine, right? You're like, is that like not on the list of things we can ask for? She says, I'm not going to pray for that. I've prayed for clarity at different times in my own life, and God just rarely gives it. So I'm not going to pray for that, but what I will pray for is I'm going to pray that God would give you the ability to trust him even when there's not clarity. Wouldn't you just imagine that that's what God would say? I could give you clarity, you wouldn't believe me. I could show you. I don't know that you'd trust me enough to know that's really what I'm going to do. So in the meantime, would you be willing to just trust my timing? Would you be willing to open up your hands, open up your heart and say, God, I don't know how long this season is going to last, but I want to trust you. I want to be the kind of person where you can say, she was faithful even in the waiting. He was faithful even in the way. He trusted me. She trusted me even when she couldn't see the future. Don't you want to be that kind of, don't you want to have that kind of faith? Listen, here's the prayer that I wanted us to end with today. You're welcome to adopt this. You're welcome to not. But for me, I'm trying to pray this prayer. God, help me to get everything I can out of this wilderness before I get out of this wilderness. You're going to be out of this season at some point. It's going to resolve itself. God is going to show up. He is going to provide. But God, would you help me to get everything out of this I can before I get out of this? Would you help me to get everything I can out of this wilderness before you get me out of this wilderness? And let me just tell you, if that's you, if you're in a season of waiting, I know this is hard. I know it's not easy. But the beauty of the church is that you have men and women that would say, I'm with you. I am here with you. So would you pray for me? Pray with me. Father, we just trust you. As hard as that is to do, we want to trust you. God, I do pray for the man or the woman that's thinking, I don't know that I have it in me. God, I pray that today you would show up, provide them encouragement, maybe provide them courage in the middle of the waiting. God, help them today somehow to recognize your presence in it. That maybe you would give them the ability today to trust you more than they ever have before. Father, thank you for Jesus who went to the cross. His waiting was painful. His waiting was excruciating. But the resurrection is on the other side. And we trust that is true for all of us, whether it's tangible or not. Thank you for Jesus. And we pray all this in his powerful name. Amen.